Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Knox. I'm the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. This is EBN podcast number 49. Our guest is Sean Smith, the Chief Platform Officer of YoScore. In this podcast, we discuss the development of YoScore, the current state of Scholastic Esports, and the future path to pro for collegiate esports. Enjoy.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Hey, y'all, it's Trent Knox back with the Esports Business Network podcast. Today we got a very, very great guest, I'd say, an amazing guest to interview. Is just the history and everything that he has in gaming and esports. The value here is going to be amazing. Again, let me introduce Sean Smith of YoScore and spelled G-Y-O. Welcome to the show, Sean.
That's right. Thanks, Trent. Happy to be here.
Yeah, amazing. So there's a little bit of backstory to Gyo in that it's sort of a part of how do you pronounce this? Herna? Herna?
It's Arena Data.
Arena Data. Okay. Yeah. And so we'll get into that too. But first off, let's get to know Sean a little bit more. I've read your bio, so I've got an idea, but for the listeners, where did this all begin? Where did it all you get into gaming? And then eventually into the esports space.
Sure. Well, I'm definitely a lifelong gamer, but starting right when I was in college, I actually began doing gaming journalism for a company called Advanced Media Networks. So this was about 15, 16 years ago. So some of your older listeners might remember GameCube Advance, Xbox Advance. Like there was this whole network of channels that was kind of competing along IGN at the time. So that's where I got started, is doing PR and marketing for them, going to E3, coordinating with publishers to get, you know, review and gaming coverage, things like that. Left the industry for a few years, but ended up getting back into it whenever I had the opportunity to be one of the founding members of Indie PopCon, which was a pop culture convention in the Midwest. That we were one of the first groups to really combine gaming and esports with that traditional Comic-Con model. Because before it had been Comic-Cons and then it had been gaming shows. And we did one that was kind of a combined effort. And that's really where I got into and fell in love with esports whenever we had the opportunity to host the Halo Championship Series. So from there, fast forward a little bit, founded Arena Data with my co-founders about 4 or 5 years ago now. And have been there ever since.
So what was the purpose of Arena Data before you guys evolved YoScore? What was the purpose of that company?
Yeah, so Arena Data evolved out of this thing that we saw where we, you know, esports is a very top-heavy ecosystem right now. Like we hear about these giant multi-million dollar prizes and these huge teams like Team Liquid and FaZe Clan and it's kind of like there's a Sistine Chapel where there's an amazing roof, but there's no basement, like there's no foundation. And so what we said was the esports is going to tilt and fall over if we don't start developing a pipeline of talent and a pipeline of gamers that can go and fill in the voids as the teams continue to progress. You know, esports is the only sort of, let's call it sports industry where you really don't know how people go pro, you know, in basketball or football, you know, oh, well, you start in the Pee Wee leagues and then you play in high school and then you get recruited to college and then you go to the NFL draft. In esports, it's a get good, ... recruited to Team Liquid. So Arena Data was originally founded with trying to bridge the gap between the average player, give them the data they need to accelerate their gameplay and hopefully make their transition into semi-pros and then the pros.
you know, I was just thinking it's really hard to bottle a Coke you've never heard of before. If Coke came out with a new flavor, it's got to be really difficult to package that, put it in stores. If it came in a strange bottle that doesn't come from just a regular distribution factory or bottling factory. So when I was thinking about you, you're really complex. You have all these different experiences, which equal a lot of flavor compared to, people who are just entering the industry who have very little experience, but the industry is much more well-developed. So their pathway to, let's say, pro is much shorter. There's not as many, obstacles in the way as it used to be. And that's because you pioneered the way. In many ways, you've made it more simple for people professionally to enter into the esports and gaming space. But when I think about that, what made you decide to enter the space? Did you go to what made you enter this into the space via PR and journalism? Did you go to school for that? Was there some sort of backstory to that?
Yeah, I was actually just a computer science major and liked developing websites in my spare time, and so I was able to help Advance Media. At the time, I was just, I was bored. I was sitting in my dorm room, and I don't even remember how I came across it, but I think I saw a forum post that was reviewers want it. I was like, sure, I'll get sent free video games and do some reviews. And it just kind of blossomed from there.
Interesting. So since that time back then, when you started doing reviews, were you doing that? You got the free games and the free stuff, but what was the transition, I guess, into some of the ways that people get paid for journalism and stuff like that? Because the way I'm seeing it kind of from your experience is that early days, building that out was based on in-kind offerings, not necessarily being paid for that opportunity.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it definitely was like that back then, and it's actually better today than it was then, but I didn't get paid for my time at Advance Media. But it was truly valuable and completely shaped who I am today. So, that's way better than if they would have given me 8, 9, 10 bucks an hour, That's not to say that, your time isn't valuable and you should just go out and be free slave labor. But when you have the opportunity, if you've got a company that's got a vision and a passion and you can contribute to them, I got my first real job outside of college specifically because of the time that I put in at Advance Media. Didn't happen to be in esports at the time or gaming. It was working for marketing for a print shop. But I got that experience because when I graduated college, I had, 3 years of working for Advance Media, which was all marketing experience that they loved.
Well, I mean, in other terms or changing it, it's the internship that opportunity to build the experience, to put on a resume, to go forward in a career. And, I guess this kind of goes down the pathway and going into the conversation about esports and education, because with education being one of those things that, definitely was people – they looked at education, at least higher education, as, they looked at it with a second point of view because of the pandemic, and people were looking at it like, do we need to spend $40,000 to go to Harvard, or can we go to a state school or a university and get the same value out of that, the education? Because what real networking do you accomplish when you're doing online courses at Harvard? Sure, it goes stamp on a resume, but that really gets you your foot in the door so far before, people, call your bluff or see past the thin veil of what Harvard online really is. Not to say that online courses are bad, but combined with education, combined with esports, for those who have a real passion for gaming, what are some of the opportunities out there? Because the kind of online learning and esports look like they're going hand in hand, and there doesn't seem to be any reason why someone who wants to be a professional esports player can't pursue their education at the same time that they're playing professionally or playing collegiately.
Yeah. I mean, I wish that, you know, I was 18, 19 years old and just going to college, because I would have loved to have these opportunities when I was a kid. But the reality is that I think 400 plus schools this year will offer some level of collegiate scholarship. And we began to really do our first pivot when we held our first online combine, which was back in 2018, 2019, definitely way before the pandemic. And we didn't have anybody that went pro, but we ended up having 100 players get scholarship offers just out of that one event. And that's when we said, whoa, this is an amazing opportunity. So we began really building our platform out so that we could then kind of refocus our data analytics around, okay, let's not necessarily look for the players who are going to be future esports superstars. Let's look for the players that maybe are a little more raw, the players that would be really good on a collegiate team, maybe could use that experience on that collegiate team to then further career. And that became kind of a nice sweet spot for us. So we've been running combines online now for several years. I've got hundreds of players that have now are going to school specifically because they got an esports scholarship. I have a kid who moved, I keep calling kids, in this case, definitely not a kid. I have a young man who, he was married. He was 23, 24 years old, and he ended up moving his family from Washington State all the way to West Virginia to play on a Call of Duty scholarship. And those are the really exciting opportunities that I love that we've been able to sort of stumble on and provide. And that's really where we spend a lot of time is focusing these days is how do we bridge that education opportunity through our esports combines and our website.
That's very cool. That's very cool. My high school days are getting away from me at this point. I'm, you know, been, I think had 10 years and I'm not sure how many years you're out of it, but my college days are a little bit closer. So I can kind of remember the experience of going through admissions and whatnot, and like looking to get into my dream school, finding out I couldn't get into my dream school, and being, you know, settling on a state school, then transferring to a university. That process was very complex. So when I think about, you know, young high school students thinking about going into going to college because of esports, not because of something else like that they wanted to go to learn a traditional trade or something like that, but they're going because they want to play for the University of Southern California Trojans or something like that. What is your experience talking with parents and young young students about their perspective on collegiate esports, and why do they want to be a part of it?
Well, I'll talk about players first. You know, I think it comes down to, you know, a little bit of a sense of belonging, right? Like, not to lean into a stereotype, but a lot of gamers aren't necessarily athletes. So they aren't going to be getting a football scholarship or a basketball scholarship. And so for a very long time, there's always been this class of, let's call it, geeky individual that, you know, they're more into games, more into you know, digital culture. And there wasn't that type of scholarship opportunity. And with esports, now there is. So you can take these kids who, again, they never were going to get on a green field to get an athletic scholarship. Now they have the opportunity to. So it just opens this awesome window of opportunity that frankly, they'd never had before. But what's really cool is, you know, with parents, getting to have that conversation directly one-on-one with parents, you know, you get to explain to them that, hey, no, this isn't just them playing video games or wasting time. This is more about the real opportunity to play as a team, communicate, win and lose gracefully, like all the things that we love and cherish from traditional sports, from like the sense of sportsmanship. You get to have those things in a proper esports varsity program too. So parents are coming around to the concept as well.
Which is interesting because as someone who's a little bit closer to the sun than a lot of parents or gamers, looking at the collegiate space and, you know, having gone to a few different seminars and conventions and things around the collegiate space, some of the universities that are known for traditional sports, their support for esports is not there. Talked about varsity programs, which encompass a lot of the times at the athletics department, and the athletics departments a lot of the times own the branding around those universities, from you know, the mascots to the name of the university, to a lot of different capacities. And so, you know what, in some ways, going to the larger universities, kind of, it's not the dream that they wanted it to be, by going to maybe a satellite school, or going to a university that's more, has accepted more the state of esports, is a better opportunity than, you know, going to one of those tier one collegiate universities. What is the process that Gyo has developed in helping these young students and whatnot pursue, whether it be in high school or in collegiate, getting to the point that they're participating in their esports programs?
Sure. You know, with universities and colleges, the thing to remember is that they move very slow. You know, they're often big institutional bodies that have a lot of history, a lot of tradition, frankly, a lot of legal framework that they have to work through with the NCAA. So in this case with esports, yeah, the smaller schools have been way more nimble. So when you look at the 400 schools that currently offer esports scholarships and varsity programs, you might not recognize a ton of names on that list right off the bat. But I think that's actually a real advantage. You know, as somebody that went to a small school myself, that can be a great collegiate opportunity for anybody. So it's easy to be drawn to, you know, the bright, shiny lights of, you know, the Ohio State Universities or the Boise States. But for a lot of people, you know, Shenandoah University is an amazing opportunity. You can get an amazing education if you're at Park University in Missouri, or I think actually they're in Kansas. I can never remember. They're in Kansas City, and I don't remember which one. But, you know, what we try to do is expose those students to those schools and give them just a ton of options. So our goal would be to take a player, have them sign up for a platform. They can actually complete a scholarship survey, a scholarship readiness survey, where we help them understand, okay, what kind of chances do they have to get an esports scholarship? And then we match them with as many schools as possible, just to give them, you know, as much variety in their option as they possibly can. So, you know, we're proud that we've absolutely found new collegiate homes for players in colleges that they'd never even heard of until they got that recruitment letter from Gyo, or until they got talked to at the combine by that university. You know, I think that's one of the cool things that we do is, you know, we're really exposing students to new schools and hidden gems all around the country, and actually two countries, as we work with Canadian universities as well.
Interesting. So how does a student or parent discover Gyo? And my question really is what are you doing to booth or find students? Probably not using the right terminology there, but what is your marketing? How do you find students?
Sure. You know, a lot of it is just your standard Facebook, Twitter, Instagram type social media marketing. We don't do a lot of organic social media ourselves. We actually go more the paid route. Oftentimes we're targeting, you know, those kids that are in their teens and their parents. And then we also actually get a ton of students by reference. Some of the players that are playing on scholarships that they got through GEO right now love to refer us to their friends. In fact, we've I just talked to St. Ambrose University, which is an awesome school. They've got a great esports program, and they found, you know, a player on GEO, and sure enough, that player had a buddy that's like, hey, I really don't like my current school. Like, can I transfer? Heck yeah, you can. And so now they're going to be playing as friends on the same esports team at St. Ambrose University. And you know, what's better than going to college with one of your best buddies?
Absolutely. I heard you talking about that. I was thinking, what's the process of getting a scholarship underwritten, at least funded, so that players can use them at the universities that they're awarded for? What is the process there?
Sure. Each university is different. Sometimes mm-hmm. universities get, you know, sponsorship awards that a sponsor will come in and pay. But a lot of universities, they have a system that's very like their athletics program. I'd say about 50% of universities run their esports program under athletics. And so it's a very similar model. So, you know, you're going to go through the application process. Oftentimes they're going to offer you that scholarship, and that's going to be contingent on you also, you know, passing the requirements to go to this school. And as long as you pass those and you commit to the school, then, you know, you get the scholarship. And you continue accruing that scholarship so long as you meet your obligations, which, you know, is important for students to understand. You can't just get the scholarship, play for a week, and then, you know, bug off. Like, you've got to play for the team. You've got to keep your grades up. But each school is of course, different. But generally speaking, you know, that is one thing that you got to remember is you're committing for a team. So when you go in there, you've got to play and you've got to commit to getting better and helping to build a championship squad with the school.
So you said about 50% are in the athletics department. So the money that gets distributed to the programs for sponsorships is coming from budgeting of those particular departments. And funding may come through endowments or through other like the alma mater and whatnot, in order for these programs to be able to recruit good, talented players. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, that's especially the way it's going to work with the bigger schools. In fact, the CEO of Activision just made headlines by donating, I think, $500,000 to University of Michigan or Michigan State, one of those two.
Right.
I know I'm going to make mad whichever fan base he isn't actually part of. but yeah, I think that you're going to see a lot of that, especially as, you know, some of the alumni of some of these schools continue right. to excel in esports. You know, I'm not sure where, you know, Ninja went or people like that, but I think you're going to start seeing more high profile gifts from those types of individuals to help boost these programs. Because a lot of times the programs do work off of internal funding first, so they don't necessarily have all the resources they need to make a really big splash, but, you know, they're at least kind of getting the wheels turning.
And what's the current, like, state of outside sponsorship? Not, you know, from the school. What is it? What kind of scholarships are students getting? Are they getting it from like their local car dealership, or is it big? Like, you know, I got a scholarship early on from Simon, which is like retail, the malls and things like that, the Simon Youth Foundation, for like my Scholastics and things like that. What's the state for esports externally from the actual collegiate system?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of groups out there that are doing that sort of stuff. Sponsors, of course, are all over esports. So typically, you know, you're going to see those kinds of awards that come through tournament or league competition. You know, groups like Varsity Esports Foundation, they're all about just generating scholarships however they can, and they're a wonderful nonprofit. This is also an area that is still relatively new. You know, the first esports program was started up in at Robert Morris in 2016, and that's only 5 years ago. And keep in mind that we're kind of got a COVID do-over year. So, you know, technically 4 years ago, if you want to say, hey, let's not count that COVID year. So I think that because things really slowed down last year, they're just now starting to ramp back up. So I'm really excited to see especially the opportunities for our 2022 crop of students. But the 2021 class should have some great scholarship opportunities too.
Let's revisit this esports combine. What is this? What is an esports combine? When I think of the NFL combine, I think of, you know, football players doing the 40-yard dash, vertical, you know, hitting sprints, you know, doing all these different drills. What's an esports combine?
So it's exactly that. That's our vision too. In fact, we're based in the city of Indianapolis, and we actually are the city that hosts the NFL draft. And we have partners at Indiana Sports Corps that help put on that event. And we're working directly with them to create that type of physical event for the combine here in the future. Our first one was going to be that pandemic year, unfortunately. So we obviously had to delay that. We ended up hosting a virtual combine instead. This year, just to be out of an abundance of caution, we're also doing it virtually. There will be a live component too, but it'll be kind of small. But in 2022, we hope to have that exact atmosphere that you're talking about, but for esports. And instead of doing 40-yard dashes, they might be doing hand-eye coordination tests. Instead of, you know, throwing, you know, 80-yard bombs, then we hope to throw them into unique situations in esports to test their mental acuity as they, you know, get into strange situations. So the idea of the combine at the end of the day is let's take prospects, let's get them in front of as many scouts as possible all at once, and give them the best opportunity to be discovered. And that's what we do. And with our virtual component, since we can't actually do the physical side, we do a series of events, tournaments, leagues, as well as look at the their existing data from games that they've played in order to generate scouting profiles, and then they can get recruited based on those.
That's interesting. Scouting profiles. That's been something I've talked about. I don't think I've ever mentioned it on the podcast. Maybe I have, but the data around high school athletes with Max Preps and all these different websites that kind of track their performance on and off the field in many ways gives collegiate scouts a good idea of who they should be looking at to be recruiting for their university. So have you had that conversation at all with collegiate leaders as far as like their recruiting process?
All the time. We really do focus on trying to make sure that we're delivering to the college scouts and recruiters what they're looking for. And, you know, some people might be surprised that it's not entirely based on MMR, for example. Like a lot of players may be intimidated by thinking, man, you know, there's a lot of grandmasters and masters players out there. I'm never going to get a college scholarship. Well, we actually see a lot of players in silver, gold, platinum, diamond tiers that get scholarships. And that's because college coaches are uniquely looking for players who are going to be a good personality fit in addition to a skilled player. So they are happy to take, you know, somebody that's considered a project player, you know, they're diamond or gold tier, but they've got a great GPA. They've got a great attitude. They fill out our personality profile and it shows that they're a leader. They fill out their student interviews and they have great responses. They look for that personality. So for anybody listening right now that has that thought that's like, ah, I'm good, but I'm not that good, you can get a college scholarship. As somebody that got stuck in an ELO hell for Overwatch and could never get past diamonds, I could have gotten a scholarship too. So there's hope for players of all different skill levels out there.
Hmm. Kind of going back to the combine in a way. I've been really thinking about this a lot, and I'm working on. I don't know what this is. It could be a blog, could be, you know, a formal press release, something like that, about the fact that when the outside looks in and thinks of the term esport and esports or whatever you want to call it, and even people within esports have a very difficult time defining what is esports, and not in the sense of like it being a sport or not. That's sort of like the introductory thought. But what is an esport in the sense of comparing it to American football, comparing it to hockey, comparing it to another league or something like that? When we're talking about the combine, are you separating out the esports by game or by the kind of the goal of the game in a way? So we have a Valorant, we have a CSGO, we have a Call of Duty. Do we separate that into an FPS category, or are FPS even more niche down to being like, these are specifically S&D combines, specifically for S&D, or do we kind of lump it all in together and have S&D with Battle Royale, with all these other forms of FPS or third-person shooter type games?
Yeah, awesome question. That's definitely something that we want to get down to the raw skill when it comes down to you as a player. So we love looking at not just your Call of Duty history. We love looking at your Call of Duty history and your PUBG history and your Fortnite history. Because ultimately, if you're good at first-person shooters, you're going to translate from game to game. Sure, you've got to learn the nuances and things like that. But that's one of those opportunities for finding that player that's coachable. So you could end up being a college coach and you could say, hey, you know, I'm trying to fill out my Valorant roster and you know, I'm just not finding any recruits on the Valorant side, but I got this kid that's amazing at CSGO. I bet I could recruit them and sort of let them transfer over to Valorant. And I think that's an awesome opportunity, especially for players that do tend to be more of those flex heavy players, the ones that jump around from game to game. To sort of go back and answer the question with the esports combine, that's a big part of our goals. Is we don't just want to get your game specific data. We also want to get your raw metrics, your core metrics, not just around skill, but also around your psychology, your personality. So we try to get a holistic view of you as a person and not just, you know, Trent the Rocket League player or Trent the League of Legends player.
Right. So if I'm thinking about, I'm graduating from high school and I'm wanting to pursue a traditional sports career in, let's say, American football. For the international audience, I'm saying this, and for American audience, don't hate me for saying American football. But you know, I may be able to make it to a tier one collegiate university. And then once I get out of that program, I may make it to the NFL. Let's say I'm not good at the NFL. And I, you know, in my mind, the way that kind of goes down, you know, you go down a league, you end up maybe in the CFL, or you end up in the XFL, or you end up in another league, maybe you end up playing rugby instead of American football. Again, apologies. What is that in esports? Because at this point right now, you look at Twitch metrics, you look at viewership numbers, and the money flows where the advertising dollars are. The money flows where sponsorship is involved. And you look at that, you see, well, Call of Duty has league money. Valorant has creative money. There's money in both of those things. But if I'm going through a collegiate program, how do I make the decision which game I should be pursuing? Much like, should I be pursuing a career in the NFL or the CFL because of where my talent is, or my skill level is and talent is?
Sure. You know, esports is kind of funny because it already off the bat, esports is the kind of sport that you can skip if you're good enough. You know, there are players that probably are too good to play on collegiate teams. They should just jump right into the pros, and that's typically what you see. In fact, we're actually kind of seeing that some of the players will go to the pros. They finish their pro career. They're 26, 27, 28 years old, and then they go back to college. So if you're not already that pro-level caliber talent, then what you should be really doing is focusing on the game that is your passion, but importantly, making sure that you're also picking the educational path that you want to pursue. You know, with the NFL, with the NBA, there's always that dream of getting recruited and not having to work in the traditional sector, and that exists in esports too. But it is a very, very, very targeted demographic. You know, there's not very many players in the world that are really making that much money. So you've got to have that backup plan, like truly. And so for the college players, I say, look, you know, this is your opportunity to keep getting that experience. You can definitely keep pursuing that dream of going pro once you get out of school. But, you know, at least if you don't, you really do have that education to lean back on, so that you can then start working in esports, you know, be a caster, be a journalist, be work in data analytics. Those are all awesome opportunities for any student that's graduating.
I was just wondering, you may or may not have the answer to this, but I'm sure you're closer to the answer than I am. You mentioned earlier that you're helping with collegiate in Canada. That's NA, right? What's the state of esports in the APAC region and in the MENA region in the collegiate space? Is there any information you're getting from the international side and about international students maybe coming to NA?
Well, we certainly see a ton of recruiting coming over. Traditionally, the schools that are outside of North America don't have as much of that traditional scholarship structure. So if you went to school in the UK, the idea of getting a scholarship to do just about anything is kind of foreign. So there are schools, I know a lot of Australian universities, for example, that do some level of scholarship program, but they're a little behind, or they just have a completely different format that doesn't look like what we do here. But we definitely see a lot of international recruiting, especially from those top programs, you know, programs like Harrisburg that won the ESPN national championships. They like to go out and they like to recruit those international players, and they're happy to give full scholarships and pay all sorts of fees to get them. So you are seeing some of that, but don't want that to diminish anybody's hopes. There are tons of opportunities out there, whether you're based in the US, Canada, or abroad.
I mean, that kind of, when you mentioned that it's, you know, kind of within the UK, it's not normal. There's not, it's not generally that people get scholarships for UK universities. I was thinking about Germany. I'm thinking about state, you know, countries that going to school or being participating in the university is something that's free. Do you see that, the students are more invested in the success of their time in collegiate, going to university, because they see that they have to get their keep their grades up. They got to participate in the esports program to maintain their scholarships, to maintain getting on academic probation and being removed from admissions and then subsequently being put on probation.
You mean specifically in Europe, or you mean just in
no
general?
I mean more particularly in people who are paying for their schooling versus those who are getting it for free.
Yeah, I think that probably does happen, but actually we see more often the opposite result, where you especially see this at the high school level. If you tell the student that, hey, your grades are too low, they will actually rise to the occasion. They'll improve those grades to get off of academic probation, just because they so desperately want to be a part of that esports club. So you definitely do have to worry about that, right? Like if you are a student that struggles with your grades, you've got to pull those up. You've got to change your habits and your studying so that you can avoid those types of things. But generally speaking, I think that going on academic probation is rarer than maybe traditional sports, particularly because you don't have an institution like the NCAA that's very, very strict on how those things work. The NCAA has said, we're hands off on esports. So each school can sort of make some of their own rules. And so there's a little more wiggle room there. So it's definitely one of those situations that I think that the schools work with you to help make sure that you can stay on the digital field, so to speak, just as long as you're committing to improving yourself and improving your grades.
And so this is sort of very new, that pro organizations are aligning themselves with universities as a means to develop maybe players versus the more common method of discovery via Twitch clips or YouTube videos or something like that, that kind of, or Discord communities or what have you, referrals, whatever. What have you seen so far in the, alignment between pro orgs and collegiate universities?
Yeah, we haven't seen as much of that yet as I would like to see. Again, I think those pro orgs, they kind of, they're going to pluck the cream of the crop wherever they come from. So, they're going to be more likely to be, scanning the charts to look for those GM players, those master level players. And then they don't care if they're, 16 or 28, they're just going to go grab them. So I would love to see more of it. I know that there's been a couple that have started to dabble into it. But so far, we don't have as many stories of I graduated college and then got recruited to the pros. In fact, I can only think of one. I can't remember what university he came from, but there was at least one player that I recall. He graduated and then he got picked up for one of the Overwatch D-League teams. I don't think he ever made an official roster, but still, that's a transition to the pros right there. So that's an opportunity that I don't think that the pro teams have taken a big enough advantage of yet, but hopefully we'll see that change.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I'm familiar with the case study that you're talking about with the Overwatch player that came into the contenders. And but I don't remember his name either. So that's the question is, what is the star power that's being developed out of collegiate? What component is there in that manner?
That's the other tough part about esports, right? Is, I'm going to say something that might be a little controversial here. Esports is in a state that we aren't necessarily seeing the best players in the world. We're seeing the best marketed players in the world. So there are definitely professional players who are professional more because they are popular than because they have the technical skills. So I guarantee you that there are players right now in college that are more technically sound and better overall skilled players than some of the players that are currently competing on the big pro teams. And that's the really tough thing about esports, is it's so influencer heavy, and it's so difficult to find talent that oftentimes you do sort of fall back on this, well, you know, how many Twitter followers do you have? So that's something that as the industry matures, I really hope to see that change.
I feel the sentiment. I also think, you know, they haven't been able to kill Tom Brady yet. You know, he's sure. He's out there, you know, star power. And, you know, they use him, you know, as a sex symbol in many ways to sell, you know, football tickets to men and women around the world. So, I mean, esports, in a way, there has been some disconnect between the player and the game and the teams and who's supposed to be in front of the camera and what that is. And that's all being developed out in production. But as we wrap it up here, we're coming up on the 45 minute mark here. I want to give you the opportunity to talk about anything upcoming that you want to promote, and also how people can get connected with you online. And if there's anything that maybe we missed to the conversation.
Sure. No, I appreciate that. You know, the biggest thing that we're working on is our esports combine that is coming up in October. It is October 16th, 17th, and 18th. And it's going to be a virtual event. It is free for all players. So there is no cost to participate. If you want to get your name out there, if you are interested in getting recruited to a college, all you have to do is sign up. You can sign up at combine.gg. So right now we actually haven't opened up registrations. Well, as of, you know, today is June 25th. We haven't opened up registrations, but we have opened up the info list. So you can sign up there. And here within the next few weeks, you'll be able to sign up. You'll be able to create your GEO score profile. You will take several questionnaires that will kind of dig into who you are as a person and as a potential recruit. You'll add in your ranks from your various game experiences. And then you might even get plucked up to participate in a series of pre-event tournaments leading into our main show. So we're really excited. There's going to be a cool virtual component to what we're doing this year that'll be very interactive. So you'll actually get to walk around and interact with the schools. So I think it'll be a really fun time. And again, if you're a player who is 17, 18 years old, you're a junior, you're a senior in high school, even if you're somebody that took a gap year, especially because of COVID, and you're looking to go back, there's no risk. Sign up for free. You're going to start talking to colleges. You're going to start learning the information that you need. And who knows, maybe you end up with a scholarship. Like, that'd be awesome. Like, I wish I had that when I'm still paying my student loans. So.
Yeah. And then last, the way to get connected with you.
Sure. So I'm not big on social media generally. So I've got a Twitter, but I don't check it very much, but you can always find me on LinkedIn, Sean Smith. I'm the chief product officer of Arena Data and GeoScore. So anybody who wants to network, I'm always open to connecting. So I would love to collaborate with anybody in the industry. We love working with groups around the world.
Is there a Discord server? Because we were able to talk a little bit over Discord. Is there a place where they can get involved with a community of GeoScore on Discord?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you go on to geo.gg, that is our main platform website, you can find the Discord link. It'll be on the side column and some of the pages. So that's our main community Discord portal.
Awesome. Once again, Sean Smith of GeoScore, and that's GYO.gg is the website. Thank you for
Hey, y'all, it's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our Bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the Bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.